for Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 3rd of May. Dante Exum, Howell Neto, we have neglected you all week, but we will finally get to you today, I promise. And a few more thoughts on the NBA fours. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully improving your experience as a fan and giving you some fun entertainment on this weekend or Friday, whatever it might be. I'm David Locke, and you can get this show on Himalaya, the new app, also Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and you can tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz when you get in the car. Thanks so much. Locked On NBA yesterday with Ben Golliver was a lot of fun if you want to grab that. And then in addition to that, today Adam Matas and Anthony Irwin were on the show. Quickly, we like to always review what happened last night in the playoffs, and Philadelphia blew out Toronto, really blew them out. Got up early, up I think 11 at halftime, and then crushed them in the fourth. Kyle Lowry is looking his age. Chris Paul and Kyle Lowry are both kind of proving in this series that there is a point guard age to get scared of. Kyle Lowry was born March 25th of 1986, so he's sitting at 33 years old, and Chris Paul was born March 6th of 1985. So he's sitting at 34 years old. And I would say, or actually he turns 34 this week, May, not March. So let me put this in a Jazz perspective for a second. I think if you're watching either of those, you can see that maybe they're both effective, but they have certainly slipped. Mike Conley is 31 years old. Mike Conley is 31 years old, October of 1987, so he'll be 32 right about tip-off of this year. Those two guys we just talked about, 34 and 33, and Mike Conley's 32. It's as you probably, you know, this would Kyle Lowry. Now, some of this is because of the guys around him, but Kyle Lowry at 31 years old went from 22 points to 16, and this year went from 16 to 14. His three-point shooting's gone from 41 to 39 to 35. His field goal percentage has gone from 46 to 43 to 41. Like, I mean, that is just aging. And the number that usually jumps out, I haven't looked at Lowry to see if this is the case, is the rim finishing. His has not gone that way. Well, it has a little bit. He's gone from 68 to 66 to 65. He's actually finishing at the rim about the same amount of time. Chris Paul, that's usually the bellwether. Like the minute you see that they're not getting the rim as much, it's a little worrisome. Chris Paul does not, neither of them actually show that. Their overall picture though has certainly changed. Chris Paul has a little bit different role in the way he's playing because he's shooting more threes, so his shooting is down. But it went from 48 to 46 to 42, and his three-point shooting 42 to 38 to 36. So that's at the year 33. He'll turn 34 here. Lowry was at the same point. And if those of you that are on the Mike Conley bandwagon, Mike Conley turns 32 next year. Be interesting to see. It's hard to tell on Conley what his natural trend is. He had an outlier year in 16-17, and in 17-18, he got injured and had just a non-existent year. So you almost take out the 17-18 year, but then his peak year at 29 years old was an outlier. He shot 41% from three, which is 4 percentage points better than he has in his career average, and he shot 46% from the field, which is 2 percentage points better. He's slipped considerably this year, still scoring 21 points a game. So it will be interesting to see. The word out of Memphis is that he's available. And maybe he's making himself available. In other words, okay, that's enough, guys. It's time for us to move on. So interesting just to watch that and keep an eye on that from that perspective. In regards to yesterday's fours conversation, appreciate everybody who checked it out. I did not do Draymond Green. I probably just thought of him as a center. I will put Draymond Green in there. If anybody else has any other player they think I forgot, I kind of ran through it. Somebody gave me like a list of 500 things I was supposed to do. A lot of conversation on Twitter. I checked my mentions. It was an interesting experience. No, it was fine. That three different players seem to jump out at you guys. I tried not to actually have a huge impact or comment in regards to who jumped out. The three players, one, Tobias Harris just jumps off this list. I 100% agree with you. When I did this research, it moved in my mind Tobias Harris from a you might have to pay him max type player to a I'm perfectly willing to pay him max type player. Now, what's interesting, you watch him in this series and he's just kind of a shadow, right? Like, there's just so many guys that are in the that are out there and that are in the mix with Simmons and Redick and Butler. I mean, you know, you have to remember that JJ uses a ton of possessions, and so Tobias just feels like he's kind of falling into the mix, and they're hardly using him. Last night, they ran Jimmy Butler off 24 pick and rolls, and I don't actually have their other numbers. Like, I don't have, like, I went through the game numbers trying to find it. Second Spectrum doesn't have it because there just weren't enough. Try to find, you know, the amount of drives or things like that he's having in this series, and it's really limited. They just simply have so many different guys that he's not being used at a very high level. I don't know how he feels about it. It'd be interesting to see. He got seven drives last night. He wasn't particularly good on them, but be interesting to see what he thinks. He can get a lot more money from Philadelphia, but maybe he turns it down and, you know, goes to Brooklyn, or we can talk him into Utah, and it, you know, he and Donovan really become the show if he comes to Utah. It would be quite a, it, you know, the front office of the Jazz would have to believe that he's a max player, right? So I think he's, to some extent, a unicorn. That 1,200 pick and rolls, 319 isolations, 762 drives. It's the most by any player at that position on pick and rolls and drives. That his isolation game is good. The only isolation guy that's two guys that are more active are Durant, who's the best offensive player in the league, probably, along with Harden, and Blake Griffin. So I will say that yes, last year he shot 40% from three, which was probably an outlier, but maybe he's picked that up. He shot 46% on wide open threes, which was unbelievable. Tobias Harris had an unbelievable year, and what he really did to put it into Jazz, to make some sense from a Jazz standpoint, I think, is that he took the jump that Gordon Hayward took and then got traded in the middle of the year. And very similar, actually, in the sense that he took the Gordon Hayward jump with the Clippers, then got traded to the 76ers, who have too much talent, similar to Boston, and he doesn't feel the same. So I'm in the bag for him. I'm a believer. The numbers peak out to me. I would make huge sacrifices if I had the opportunity to get him, just because of what the numbers say. Like, so I'm completely, I might be wrong too, right? I mean, there's a real chance. The other two guys that seemed to jump out to people were Rudy Gay, which is, makes some sense. He's fifth on the list of pick and roll ball handlers. He's fourth on the list of the guys who've run the most isolations. He's a great driver still. His three-point shooting, which was not natural to him, was at 40%. His wide-open three-point shooting was at 44%. He didn't get a huge, his percentage was of amount of wide-open shots was three. It's interesting. He's a player, and I think the one thing I really liked on Rudy Gay is his defensive rebounding is really good. You know, we can talk about some of Jay Crowder's lack of shooting. Probably the one that disturbs me the most on Jay Crowder is that his overall rebounding is one of the least of that at the position. Now that's because he's been forced out of position as a three to a four, and understandable, but I actually have become more and more a believer that rebounding really, really matters. To me, rebounding is, I think, the trend that's being lost. That's why we're so good when we have favors. And if we move past favors, it's going to be a considerable step back to not have that kind of rebounding. It's a big deal. because offenses are so good that an extra offensive rebound is more valuable than it's ever been. And the third player that jumped out was Jamichael Green. And I agree. Those were the three names everybody said to me on Twitter. Obviously, you guys seem to understand, or looking at the sheets, it's available for you on my Twitter feed. I can post it for you again if you want to look at this. If you missed it, yesterday's show was all about the four position and the different ways they play and things of that nature. And then there's a link in my Locked On Sports Twitter account to all the data. But I agree, Jamichael Green kind of peaked out on this. And I'll be curious. I think he's been kind of lost in the shuffle. And so I don't know what his payment structure is at this point. But if he's a $7 to $10 million guy, I am all over that. Oh boy. I might go higher. I might go 10 to 15 if you're breaking it into groups of five. I think Jamichael Green from, again, just looking at the numbers, and I can't watch these guys enough, so I'm going to go by the numbers, peaks out on this. I was surprised. His 3-point shooting percentage was over 40%. His career is only 37. He does not get a lot of threes, so you have to be a little questionable of whether these numbers are restrictive, that he doesn't take a lot. So he only takes it if it's a perfect shot, which isn't great. But he drives the ball. He doesn't have the ball handling skills would be, a little bit of the problem in there. So he doesn't have any of these other skills, but he's a great rebounder. And so I like him for the rebound in the opening shots went in. Not one of the guys who can play with the ball in his hands. There are very, you know, really what we found out, the four position, Draymond, if you include him, should be in this. Tobias, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, Rudy Gay, Kyle Kuzma, Pascal Siakam, James Johnson, TJ Warren are probably the only guys that really play with the ball hand. TJ Warren's interesting too, by the way. I would keep a little bit of an eye on TJ Warren. I thought he was a restricted free agent, but I'm looking at my list right now and he does not seem to be on it. But you never know. Phoenix might just be willing to move him because they're Phoenix. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Blake and the crew do such a great job. When you go, when you work with the Murdochs, you work with their family. They're 92 years of their family and their commitment to Utah and making sure that you have a no regrets experience. We've bought a car there, had a great experience. Our customer service since we've come back for service on things has been amazing. And it really makes it easy for me to tell you about the Murdochs. The Hyundai, I've told you a lot about. I'm driving the Santa Fe right now. It's fun. It really self-drives a little bit. Amazing technology. You're always surprised by where Hyundai is on the technology front and what you can get for the dollar. But today I really wanted to make sure we talked about the Murdochs and that the family, the 90 years plus in Utah, the commitment to the community, the commitment to giving you everything they can, whether it's extending service hours, free car washes for life, safety inspections, oil changes, all those things that they can do as a local dealer to make sure that your experience is on the highest of levels. And that's what the Murdochs are all about. At 4646 South State Street as well, as you can check them out in Logan and in Linden. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Zip Recruiter. Zip Recruiter is the better way, the smartest way to hire. Zip Recruiter gives you hard to find candidates easily. Hiring is challenging, but ZipRecruiter is going to be able to do it because they have multiple job sites, stacks of resumes. No, they don't. They've stopped that process, in fact. That's what it used to be. All those resumes. Who do I know? How do I get references? What is the problem? I don't know, but now hiring is easy because ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon will let you try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience, invite them to apply for your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each and spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter to get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. It is ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon to try ZipRecruiter for free, the smartest way to hire. All right, so Dante Exum and Raul Neto were the other guards we wanted to do this week, and then it was kind of a fun week. I really enjoyed it. We went without basketball from a local standpoint, and then we went on all these different tangents throughout the week. I hope you enjoyed it. I thought it was super fun. So Dante Exum, and I sat here trying to figure out, like, how do I evaluate him? And I have my little list that we're going down on that we run down. Like, okay, so career progression. And it's hard. He played 42 games coming off his 14 games the year before, coming off the 66 games of the year before. So he's played, you know, 122 games in the last 3 years. And obviously, you have to ask yourself whether there's some question of if his body still holds. From a career progression, like, are we seeing growth standpoint? He really gets to the rim at an incredible rate. 40% of his shots are at the rim. His finishing at the rim actually decreased considerably this year. He went from 68% to 55%. So that's not the greatest offensive sign. He played a little less point guard this year. Part of me thinks he's a small forward. I gotta tell you the truth. I just don't see him with the point guard skills. I see him with the great defensive skills. His shooting has not shown signs of improvement. But he's taken 493 threes. The question is whether or not, 750 is the number. But so his career number is below 31%. You start to run that number. And it's not great. So if you start going into, it's hard with Dante because it's like, what are you running? First 5 years and only X. I mean, it's a weird, like, it's hard to figure out how you're running this. But basically, if you go to first 5 years in the NBA and you go to guards or forwards whose 3-point shooting numbers were below 32%. And you don't find guys that end up particularly, evolving into shooters. Like, I think we might want to change that. I've tried to run this in every which way. Like, give Dante the benefit of the doubt. So say, he's only 23 years old. So say it's any player under the age of 24 in their first 5 years who's shooting, try to find the player who is going to evolve into a shooter. And it's hard to find. I think you're going to have, Dante is going to be, a productive player. It's going to have to be as a guy who is I think a playmaking transition, can play the ball in his hands. I don't have a problem with that. But I think a three. Let somebody else be the point guard, play off the ball, be a driver, get a lot of things, done in that regard. Almost an Andre Karolinko type would be a little bit of kind of where I would go with some of that. Derrick Rose, by the way, couldn't really shoot and evolved this year, later in his career. So that would be Kyle Lowry didn't shoot great. He was at 32% in his first years. So it's not like this is absent. Kemba, frankly, didn't shoot well. It's not that we're absent of anyone. But it's not easy to go find guys who become shooters, with Dante's career progression. The best thing that is about Dante, and this is actually where I actually kind of, again, like him as a three, is some of his pick and roll numbers were just terrific this year. When you start to break down Dante's game and look this year, his pick and roll numbers were just fabulous. 1 point per possession as a pick and roll, ball handler. He and Favors were good. He and Gobert were not as good as some of his other stuff. That's a big step. Dante was better in the pick and roll this year. And that's his ability to stretch out, get to the basket, do those things. That's a nice sign of development. It's a development that I still see. Last year he was 0.89 points per pick and roll, and this year he was over one. That's really exciting to me. Again, I do wonder, can he do that the way Joe Ingles does, playing a small forward position or a wing position where the defensive player is not as regularly used to guarding the pick and roll? I think that that's my thought there. And I don't mean to deny him the chance of playing and the ball so interchangeable, but I almost see him as a Trevor Ariza who can make plays in transition and with the ball, which Ariza couldn't do. And Ariza's opening years of three-point shooting in the NBA, by the way, were, you know, different era a little bit, but 20, 28. Then he went to the Lakers, got to 33, 32, got to the Rockets, 33. It wasn't until he suddenly exploded in the 13-14 year that he jumped up and had this kind of unusual 40% year. And then late in his career, now he's back down to 32. He's still a 35% career because he started taking more. But maybe Dante can become that progression and then add in the fact that he can play off the ball with the ball, which I think is – there's something to be said about – putting guys who are not used to being in pick and roll. I think it's why Joe's so successful. Dante's drive game this year was only okay, or his ISO game was only okay, was a 0.89. So that part of his skills were just beating guys off the dribble one-on-one is still, it's a little loose and it's not a strength. I don't think he's got a collection of moves. That's probably a lack of experience. His drive game where he's coming off the ball is really good. And this is again where I think moving him off the ball, other guys create the advantage, boom, with his amazing speed, getting the basket. He drives a huge rate when he's on the floor. He's not always the greatest at finding people when he has the ball in his hand. So that's where I think he can go. Obviously, his shooting numbers are poor, his catch-and-shoot numbers, his those kind of things. And so if he can play that drive game, then I think there's an aspect to playing off the ball that could give him some mechanism for success, and then you play him defensively against any of the three best players that are out there. Obviously, he has to stay healthy, but I still think that's a really valuable role. I think that's something he could do. I think he could start at that role. I think there's a lot of aspects to what he could probably do in that regard. You know, his catch-and-shoot three-point shooting this year in 42 games was 29.8%. That is still, you know, a really significant hindrance to his success as an offensive player. And so I think until he figures that out, you've got to move him into other aspects of things. And he does not have an off the bounce 3-point game, of any to speak of. So those are kind of where he is as a player. We still have so many things, that we don't know. Frankly, but there are some areas where I think he can do some things. We'll look at Howell Neto, kind of a similar story, when we continue. Today's show is brought to you in part by Homey. Homey is revolutionizing the real estate world to your benefit. It's kind of cool. Out of a group of guys that were out of the BYU business program, they had success with, one of their companies already and, decided to see if they could move to the next level, looked for the industry that needed a change. They found it. It's the real estate market. So the number one change that they have made is they have changed the way in which they pay out commissions. So in other words, rather than just the set 6% all the time, what they do is a flat fee of $1,500 to list your home. So if your home's multi-million dollar, multi-hundred thousand dollar, doesn't matter. It's $1,500. The other thing they've done is they've created a team of people rather than the single individual that's working with you, and that team of people helps you through the process and gets the job done. Thus far, the market value shows that they're selling above market value and they're showing faster than the average house on the market. Find out more from Homey by texting LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. LOCK to 88588. All right, our friend Howell Neto is just the best dude in the world. I mean, he's just seriously, like, you spend any time with him, he's the type of kid you want to have over dinner, hang out, watch a movie with, just chill with. He's just a great kid. 37 games this year, 41 the year before, 40 the year before. I think that Neto has proven two things in his career. One is that he unquestionably has the talent of a backup point guard. And then part two is that, unfortunately, I'm not sure that he has shown being undersized that his body is made to be able to handle the rigor of being a backup point guard in the NBA without getting hurt. The poor guy, though, got hurt on like the last day of OTAs and missed training camp. I mean, it started in the very beginning and never ended. He's done some really neat things. Like, if you look at just kind of how much better he's gotten, it's cool. His percentage of field goals his first year, he never went to the rim. Now he goes to the rim about 30% of the time. He's gone from making 64% of those shots to 69% of those shots at the rim. He is, his 3-point shooting has been kind of in and out the last few years. This year he was 20 of 60. Last year he was 19 of 47. The year before that he was only 10 of 31. So his sample size is not huge. His plus minus is through the roof. His assist rate's gone. This is amazing. His assist rate is gone. He played about the same amount of minutes in all these. 3 years ago, 15%. To 23% to 29%. It's really great. His usage is up as well, so he's just having a bigger and bigger impact. His rebounding rate's gone from 8% to 10% to 13%. He's just throwing himself in there. He's engaged. He's active. He's really, it's, you know, there are times you still see he's undersized and he jumps and he gets caught and he commits turnovers. That comes with it and it's fine. Like, so you can actually go, this is a great example of what I was talking about with turnovers. 3 years ago, Neto never turned the ball over. He also never drove. He never got to the rim. He never had assists. Now his turnovers are up. He gets caught in some of these things. But his turnover rate is way up. He's getting to the rim, shooting better. I'll take a few turnovers, for him to be able to do that. His fouls drawn is considerably up. He's done a nice job. He's not shown over the last 2 years that the playoffs are conducive to him. Now, a little bit of that's the matchup with the Rockets, but that some of his liabilities, do get exposed a little bit, there for you when it's time for the playoffs, which is, you know, too bad. Cause he's just, you know, there's no player that when he gets on the floor, I root for more. Than Howell, but the physical limitations, you know, they're real. Like we can talk about this, but as the Jazz analyze what they're going to do, and he's a contract that they, I think they, if I remember correctly on the Jazz, the way it works is they have to decide on Neto one day, Favors the next, and Korver the next. It's like the 5th, 6th, 7th. And they're one, it's one a day. And I'll be honest on Neto. I would be surprised. I would be happy, but I would be surprised if he's back. Not out of anything involving Neto, just out of the way the system works. I don't know that the Jazz will be able to make the decision on the date in which he comes up for his deal. It's not a lot of money, but it just seems to me it's going to be a very, very hard day by which for the Jazz to know, what they're going to do with that. Or maybe by that time they've decided on Favors. And so, they know the Jazz, if they renounce their free agents, have about 13 million of cap room. If they renounce Neto, they have about 13.7 to about six, about call it 13.5 to 16 million is the math I've done. It's an extra $3 million. It really might make a difference. And I think it's too quick for them, to know. Korver's the other one. The max cap room the Jazz can get if they let all three of the guys go, I think is about 38, 39 million. If it's Favors and Neto, it's 32 million. And so I think that's an interesting one, to watch. And I think that's going to be very difficult. Neto's drive numbers were great this year. He's 1.13 points off the drive, which is some of the best in the NBA for the, only 271 drives. But I mean, it's truly, it's one of the best, there are in the NBA, which is impressive. He's unquestionably a bona fide NBA player. He's unquestionably valuable to the Utah Jazz. I'm just saying, I think the salary timing is going to be difficult, for the Jazz in that deal. Maybe they'll be willing to delay it a little bit. And we'll see. His best partner, for pick and roll points per this year, for Neto, I believe, He ran it better with Rudy. He ran it actually equally as good with Rudy and Derek. And he ran the pick and roll great with both of them at 1.12 points. So he's a great kid. He's a fabulous, become a great player. His body's not holding up a super, super great deal. And it will be interesting to see. Maybe somebody else out there will give him, you know, we have the right to hold on to him before anybody else can give him an offer, but it'll be interesting to see. I'm a huge fan, great kid. I just think the salary timing doesn't line up well. But maybe I misunderstand it, right? I mean, I think there's also, you know, sometimes I don't get how these things are going to play out. And a little bit of on that one, I think that there, I guess the decisions could all be made. But if there's any decisions not made by that point, I do think it gets pretty tricky for the Jazz to be able to decide. Let me make sure I have it right just so you know. Let me see if I can find this for you quickly. Derek Favors' contract. I have this in my notes somewhere. Derek Favors' contract is guaranteed until the 5th of July. I think Neto is the 6th and Korver is the 7th, if I'm right on this. Yeah, Neto is the 6th and Korver is the 7th. And Korver's got to decide whether he's retiring or not. You know, he still can shoot it. He's still, there's still definitely a role. It's just a question of whether he wants to. So I guess the fact that Favors is first might lead the Jazz in to know the direction they're going on Neto by the 6th. And maybe that increases the chance. Let's hope so. All right, that is Locked On Jazz today. Thanks very much for tuning in. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Back with you Monday. We'll look at Donovan's year and that position and see what it leads, what the next conversation leads us into. Talk to you soon. Have a great one. See you.